Hey, this is Food Radio.
I'm Bella,
and I am here with Dowie Chow, Maxwell Osborne from Public School New York, and pretty sure Tana from MN. MN have been here this afternoon helping us understand what they do every day, and now we're going to hear a little bit about what Public School New York is all about. Passing it on to you.
Awesome. Thank you, Bella. So I'm joined here today, filling in for Dong, who is off teaching or lecturing somewhere. But here also with the rest of my MN squad, Jonathan Garnett, creative director, Stephen Harper, operating director.
Stephen doesn't get a mic, or
he gets no mics. You're gonna understand in 1 second because
the crowd goes mild.
We're very lucky today to be able to sit down and have a conversation with two of our good friends, peers, and also people that we've looked up to here at MN for many years now. Dao Yi Chow and Maxwell Osborne from public school. you guys don't know this, but or you guys kind of know because I always joke, but you don't know how serious a joke is that here at MN, I'm like the mistaken for being the fat Dao Yi, and Jonathan is always mistaken for being the fat Maxwell. So together we're like the fat public school.
I don't know if you could be the fat version of Maxwell. I'm pretty much the fattest one here. So
but seriously, it's an honor for you guys to be here.
And thanks for joining us, honestly.
No, thank you. We're happy to be here.
Yeah, for sure. So
thank you.
We actually want to keep this pretty cool and chill. I think one of the things that always was really exciting for the times we got together to talk about our businesses and everything is that when you look at people in the creative industry, in particular minorities who are game changers, people who have come into the game.
People of color.
Yes, absolutely.
POC. We don't use minorities.
There we go.
Yep, we're POCs.
So, I love this. So I told you guys that's what we should call ourselves by POC. It's hard because Steven's white. So
MNPOCs. Sorry, everyone.
but you know, one of the things is coming into New York City and being able to, and we say coming in because Jonathan, Steven, and I have been here for roughly 20 years, which makes us feel like New Yorkers, and to be able to like start a practice in the creative field and start to work with really great people like yourselves has been challenging and unique in many ways as architects. But for you guys coming into fashion, being two POCs, but actually like New Yorkers, and coming in and like swinging the way you guys did and continue to be, for us, one of the most respected people in the game. We'd love to hear, you know, how that started out. I know you guys have been together for a while, but I don't think people really hear like the nitty gritty of the moment that you guys are like, fuck it, let's just do our own thing.
Take it away, Max.
You got it, Dow.
This one's on you, bro.
Check 1, 2, 1, 2. Take it away, D.
Passing the mic.
I just dropped the mic. Dow and I, we originally met and started working together at another company, also for a person of color, that was breaking grounds in fashion at that time. And we worked for Sean Puff Daddy Combs at that time, had like $500 million business, which was very rare. And he definitely hired, a wide range of employees. So we originally met there and grew to be friends somewhat. And
Why do you always say somewhat?
Because we were cooler later on, like we weren't as cool and we worked
you
together
cool
until like the
moment.
Latter to like the latter end of it, but
you were like my best friend there.
maybe it was one sided.
No, but we really met and then we really had our circles actually kind of crossed a lot outside of the office, which ended up making our friendship, you know, a lot tighter and closer. Then we both broke off from Shaw and John at a certain point. Dow ended up starting a store in Miami. We worked on different projects, and then as he had the store in Miami, he was like, oh, Max, should we do this private label for the store? I was like, yeah, let's do it. So we started working on the private label for the store, and it just kind of felt small, and the conversation, like walking during Fashion Week in New York, walking shows, or it was like a walking a trade show and looking at other brands, and just we're like, and he's talking about buying for his store, and then we're talking about designing for the store, and then the conversation is really like, there's nothing really exciting for us. Like, we were just like walking shit and not really enjoying what was out there, and like nothing was exciting. We're like, oh, why can't we just get this, or why, where's this, and where's this black leather jacket? Right. And that conversation really led a 2-week conversation of every day of like, what should we do and how do we do that? And literally conversation started with public school and locked ourselves in Adal's apartment for 6 months, and later on dropped this collection of public school without knowing much, like really stupid, like no planning, no, not thinking about, you know, designing it, then design, thinking about where it's going to get made, then taking a trip out to Asia and getting it produced. Then we're like, oh, who's going to sell it? And, you know, talking to some other friends, and it's like, okay, so here's the collection. Now we're selling it. Who's our salesperson? It was like us on the floor. And then we're like, how do we do this?
What year was all this?
This was started in 2007. We launched it spring 2008.
Wow.
And we
that's crazy.
We showed with a showroom, which our friend of ours owned at the time. And, you know, they took on our sales because we had no idea what we're doing, because we'd never really been on that side of the fence. And literally after that, you know, like, the sales reps are like, don't worry. Like, we're like, oh, we want to sell them Barney's. They're like, oh, it's not going to happen because nobody, Barney's never picks up spring collections. And so-and-so brands don't ever pick up in spring. Your best bets for fall. Spring came, Barney's picked up, and a lot of all the retailers that we really enjoyed picked up the brand. And then, you know, then we're like, okay, so we have all these orders. How do we ship it? You know, you go back out to Asia, you work on production, you ship it back. We're like, where do we house it? Call up another friend that we used to work with. That owned warehouses in Queens. They're like, okay, here's this room, this dusty room that we had to like mop and sweep. Here's this dusty room, you could use this to pick and pack your product. So we used to go out to Long Island every day and just send out packages, like, you know, ourselves, just dusting it out and just wearing face masks and try to ship all this product. So we were like literally designing, production, shipping, sales, everything together for the first couple seasons. But it was a great learning experience from that. And that kind of just kept going. We're like, okay, so I guess we have to design another collection, and then that's the beginning of public school.
Wow. And did you guys always do this under the public school label?
Yeah.
So what was the origin of public school, like as a name, as an identity?
Well, we had the idea for what the look was before we had the name for the brand. You know, like the look was always there, and it lived in our head way before we had any idea on what to call it or how to brand it. And it was, you know, it was always black. It was always, you know, really structured. The silhouette was a, you know, sort of like an A shape that wasn't, that you wouldn't really see from menswear. You know, we started out in menswear. And so that was really clear, and so the process of naming it, we never felt pressure, I guess, to come up with the name. But then we just had public school sketched out.
What was like that aha moment where you guys were like, oh, it could be this or it could be that, but it's public in school. Oh, snap, we're going to go with this.
It was actually between two names. It was between Black Apple and Public School at one point.
Black Apple?
Black Apple was another brand we started later on.
Wow.
As somewhat as a diffusion. But that aha moment is just really like, as you enter fashion, it was something that we wanted to be not so serious in a way. Like, you know, as you do fashion, you kind of didn't want it to be a name or like have its, there was something really like welcoming about public school. Like, people felt like non-threatened, and it was just like kind of fun, but not at the same time. So, and people, if you, especially because we had like this collective New York experience, that especially if you grew up here in New York and you went to public school, you kind of like wave that flag and you hold that badge. So like public school just had people kind of get into it and felt kind of right.
Amazing. Where were you guys sitting when you came up with that?
Was it for some your apartment or Serafina's?
No.
For some reason, I want you to say New York Noodle Town on Bowery and Bayard Street, but that's not. Is it, if it's Serafina, it's still. It's still
that's was that McDonald's?
Still gangster.
On 42nd Street.
Very gangster, especially if at 2 a.m.
No, it was. I mean, we probably, like Max was saying, we locked ourselves away in my studio in Brooklyn, and it probably was there. We literally spent every single, we didn't leave.
Yeah.
I remember like going out.
It was a friend's birthday.
Yeah, one night, and we're like, what the hell is this?
I totally remember that. We went out for a friend's birthday, and it was like a big friend. It was like a, you know, one of our friends, and it was like a big dinner.
Yeah.
And Dad and I were like, what the hell is this? This is people? Like, we're just like,
why are we here?
Like, it just felt like we were like in jail or something. I'm like, oh, did people actually do things outside of this, outside of the world? Like,
But what made you guys so, what was like the fuel for the fire that committed you guys to 6 months on lockdown, focused on getting this collection out? Like, what was that? Hmm. That you got, and it's not just one person. It's one thing if that was like, you know, I got to do this thing, life moment. If I don't do this, I'm never going to do it, and I'm going to lock myself in the room. But you guys both committed to it. Like, what was that?
Huh. The excitement of just creating. I think for me, it was like the excitement of just creating something. You know, you work for somebody for so long, but just to have, even if it was just that one collection, it was like well worth it, you know, like, and it just kind of kept going. But it was just, it was really kind of not smart in a way. Like, we had no business plan. There was nothing planned other than the week, you know, the next task. It was like, okay, we didn't even tell people really we're starting a brand. It was not even like a planned thing. Like, people were like, what you working on? We're like, oh, just, you know, working on some things. Like, and then next thing you know, you're just showing this collection, like, what, you know? So it was really not planned. I think it was just the idea of creating something from new, from scratch, and that's ours.
Yeah. And this is, you know, this is like pre-social media, right? And
right. Yeah.
Thinking about if we would do that now, that the storytelling part would almost keep yourself going, right?
Right.
That you would have an outlet to be like, here, you know, for, you know, sketches and here samples and
you did, you know, like, vacuum.
Yeah. And so I'm even like, how did I think it was just the timing of it all. Right. You know, like we
timing, but there's something, I could tell you from myself and Jonathan and Steven and, you know, for our moments when we were even launching our own company, that a lot of it came from like a bit of optimism, but also, you know, I don't speak on these guys' behalf, but I think there was also for us, we were like, you know what? We know how we can do this better, and nobody's doing it out there the way that we want to have it done. And so we're going to like dig in our heels and just grind to get this thing off the ground. Mm-hmm. And for us, it was something that we were very passionate about. But for these guys, they might have different motivations. Like, Steven might be like, oh, my God, it was the spring, and, you know, the weather was nice.
Steven's white.
Just joking. And for Jonathan, because he's a magician, he's just kind of like, you know, oh, my God, I can, like. He's like throwing glitter everywhere. And for me, it's like I have a lot of motivation that will be rooted both in, like, because my ego will be like, I can figure out how to do this better, but also a little bit of anger because it's just kind of, like, frustrated with how things are. And, like, you know what? If I'm going to prove a point, then I'm just going to commit myself to X, whether it's 6 months, and, like, it's going to be painful, but let's just do this. So, like, for you, like, what is the thing that you're just kind of, like, both you guys looked at each other and it's like, 6 months, here we go, grind this out. Who knows what comes out on the other end, but, and there's no social media to show people how hard we're working, but we're going to do this. That's a big deal. Like 07, nobody's doing that. I'm sure a lot of people do it in your industry, but a lot of people don't come out the other end with accolades and like where you guys are.
Yeah. I mean, I think it was us just feeling like we had, you know, like you're saying, something different to present and to showcase. I mean, it's such a different industry, like worlds away from where we are now, mm-hmm. where the barrier to entry was really, really high for what we were trying to do. Yep. So, yeah, I mean, again, there was a bit of optimism. There was a bit of sort of belief that there was nothing out there that spoke to us, and so we felt compelled to try to get it out of our system. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like Max was saying, part of it was, you know, naivete on our end to think we could do something that didn't exist at the time, right? Mm-hmm. Which was, you know, taking all the different elements, you know, that we were influenced by, whether it was, mm-hmm. you know, streetwear or high fashion or what, you know, whatever the names are, or the descriptions were, we just knew that it didn't exist at the time. And so I think in the quest to try and get it out of our system, we sort of just were really focused on getting it out of our system, you know. And we didn't even really love the collection when we got it back. Like, yeah, I remember getting the sample collection back, and
we almost didn't show it.
Yeah, we weren't gonna.
No kidding.
Yeah, we weren't gonna do anything with it. Like,
yep.
Shit.
Did it feel like a risk to you guys at the time? Like when you were like, okay, let's do this. Like, was it like, we're taking a leap? We're doing something that could mess us both up. Did that feeling cross your mind, or were you just like,
no,
it made sense?
I don't know if it made sense.
It didn't
either.
Make sense. Yeah, it didn't make sense, but it was like a no risk thing. So even when we didn't almost show the collection, we were just like, okay, cool, we could just try it again. You know, like it was like, but then we had the collection, we're like, fuck it, let's just show it. And it was like, yeah, it was really no risk. It was definitely not a thought process. Like, we were just really naive.
Yeah.
Fuck it. Let's get into it. If it does well, does well. If it doesn't, doesn't. Get back to the drawing board and keep it moving. You know.
So this was 07?
Yeah, we showed 08. So we were working on it in 07.
08. And I preface this by saying that when Dong Ping Wong, who set up this show, he was just kind of like, he's like, ask the questions that people normally don't ask, or basically just the stuff you guys shoot the shit about when you're, you know, in private. A question I always want to ask you guys, without the vulgarity.
Not that private.
Yeah, we got to keep it a little bit PC. Apparently this is recorded.
This is for
the five listeners out there will probably not care, but this is recorded in perpetuity. So in 07, 08, when you put out that first collection, this is something I actually kind of always wanted to ask. When did you guys craft the public school brand and your own images? Like, for example, like the brand is so strong. Mm-hmm. Like from jump, the first time I learned about public school was around 2011. And to see it come out and to have a like Asian founder, Jamaican founder, straight out of New York. And in 2012, I'd been here for 12 years, so I felt like a real New Yorker. But then I saw both you guys, and I felt like a fool. Like, you know, it's like I was just fronting.
We're all posing.
Yeah, we're all posing. But the thing is that you also, your brand and your image is also extremely defined. Like, Maxwell, you have a very defined look, very always handsome. Right? Thou.
Stop it.
Thou. That was sexy. He's on blushing. 10 nonstop, and so. But seriously, like, when did you guys start crafting this? Because if you're locked in the room and developing your stuff, like, how does this fit into the larger narrative? I wanted to ask you this all the time, Maxwell, specifically, because you always come through like on 10.
Are we talking about the same person?
even now, you're doing the interview in sunglasses. I'm always like, man. I'm gonna tint my glasses.
Oh, these are prescription.
Like Dal said, my glasses are prescription. the hair kind of happened by mistake, and I just stuck with it. So there's no real crafting. This hair is easy because I don't have to comb it. I just have to wash it.
Okay.
The fat belly, just I eat well, so just that came about. Yeah.
But how about this? How about even just like the, for the most part, you guys are something that I always identified with Jonathan and Steven. It's like the all black everything, very refined, what you would think is New York, but taken to a level of like bespoke refinement. Everything you guys do, the subtlety and the details, even in your personalities, it's just, it comes through in this very, I don't know how you describe it. I've turned to Jonathan, who's has
the
a bigger...
French says, je ne sais quoi.
Yeah, you could call it je ne sais quoi. I was going to say you have a bigger vocabulary than me.
Yeah, yeah.
But seriously, like, that is also what helps to, like, I feel like that is, that only reflects the thinking of mm-hmm. what's inside. And, like, how did that, while it's natural, but how did it help for you to define the public school brand and, like, you know, being the face of the brand is also, as you know, a really, really big deal. Mm-hmm. And how you guys have, like, curated that and how you've evolved it over the years, because it's now been, like, a decade.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was saying before about the timing of it all. It just felt, you know, like everything just kind of worked out. You know, we knew what look we wanted. You know, mm-hmm. we knew what silhouette we were going for.
Yeah.
And it just, I think it just was so new, you know, that everyone sort of took notice because we were so far left from what was happening in the mm-hmm. marketplace. It was like Americana, mm-hmm. you know, right. Paul Bunyan, you know,
yep.
flannels and, and we were just so different from what was happening, and we were, you know, I guess it was, you know, it was real. Like people felt realness. Feel me?
They felt the connection.
They felt the realness. You hurt?
Wait.
Excuse me, Doug.
For all the, for
no,
all the,
you hurt? It was real.
I would tell you, you guys were featured in, I'm going to butcher the date, I want to say 2012, 2013 New York Times article that was about you two in public school.
We had a couple of those.
Yeah.
You just talking about the covers or?
There was one in particular that was about specifically you two guys and not just the label. And it had, I remember, black and white portraits of you both. And Jonathan over here actually forwarded me this article.
Oh.
Yeah. He forwarded me this article in the email, and he's just kind of like, hey, these guys are like the fat version of us.
That was back then. I'm paying the price now.
And we had already known about you, but to like, because that article, it was a story about specifically you guys. And for us, when we were launching our own, in the process of launching our own firm, it was one of those things where it's like, you know, to celebrate New York City in a way that you can design for New York and like make, it's almost like New York as like a brand. It was something that we really admired and looked up to. And so I think for us, seeing how that brand has continued to evolve over time, I mean, you guys went in, did incredible, like, I say this bias because I grew up on Jordan, like the stuff you guys do with Jordan is like crazy. One of the shows that you did in this past year in Chinatown, I think for me, I've attended only half a dozen fashion shows in my career, and various shows of our peers. And I went to your guys' show, which was like in one of the dingiest walkway alleys in Chinatown, the one that crosses between...
Top three favorite locations.
Right? Between Bari and Elizabeth. I think everybody who's listening might know it underneath the famous Jing Fong. And you guys put together this incredible show that celebrated Chinatown. And that was, like, of course, when DACA and the Dreamer thing was, like, becoming at its peak. And for you guys to make a statement, not only... I remember you put out the hats that you guys were repping at that show, but to put a show right in the middle of Chinatown, I thought was incredibly powerful. Like, can you share like the inspiration and everything? How did that show come together? Because that's, you know, I've seen designers since, I won't mention names, some really big Asian designers who've been trying to do stuff in Chinatown that have not been able to pull it off. And you guys did something that was like meaningful on so many levels.
well, let's shout out Jonathan Chu. we came across that space where we did that show, actually wasn't, we were walking around Chinatown and talking to Jonathan about the different spaces mm-hmm. we had. We walked 50 Bowery, we walked the hotel and like looking mm-hmm. around.
All of his properties.
Pretty much all of them.
Jonathan Chu, just for the listeners out there.
One of the
nicest, but also philanthropic Asian Americans based out of Chinatown. Also a good friend of ours. But somebody who I think we've all worked with and in this case has helped to put together that show.
Yeah. So when we're walking those spaces, we actually took the shortcut through that alleyway, through that arcade. Mm-hmm. And I was like, Jonathan, what about this? You know, and he's like,
the grimiest he's like, sidewalk in New York.
Sure. I was like, yeah, like, can we do this? You know, and he's like, I don't see why not. When's your show again? And he's like, might be hard because it's dim sum on Sundays and it's, nice. You know, it's like going to be a shit show. But, you know, we walked it again and kind of really just tried to lay it out, walked it through with our producer. Mm-hmm. And it was something about that space, because if you walk into 50 Bowery on the second floor mm-hmm. and everything that was going on, the DACA and everything that we were kind of, you know, waving our flag about was,
yep.
that was the, you know, one of the original spaces for like Five Points mm-hmm. and what that meant for immigrants and coming into New York. And
yes.
that specifically was just like, kind of like, damn, it kind of has to be here. Mm-hmm. Our producer's like, guys, you can only seat this many people. This is going to be a shit show. Like,
yep.
we're like, we kind of want to do it. We have to do it here. Like, you know, it was like a very tight show. Like, the walkway, it was like really intense, but we loved the space so much and what it really meant for Chinatown and for the Five Points and immigrants. We had to really show there. But it wasn't even on the radar for Jonathan to even show us that space. Like, we was literally walking through as a shortcut, and I was like, this is quite amazing.
It's crazy. And you guys set up a pop-up around the corner on Elizabeth. Yeah. Mm-hmm. For your Nike,
the Jordan release,
yeah, and then there was like a huge line outside for that. I mean, I think it's what's really interesting is you took literally one of the most let's call it underdeveloped areas of the Manhattan Chinatown, and brought all these A-listers out there and did this really really beautiful show. And on top of it was like one of your Jordan collaborations. So right. After the show was over, there was still a line of people outside crowded around just to like get the collection that also the collection itself celebrated Chinatown, mm-hmm. which I think was really beautiful, which makes me want to ask Maxwell, because a lot of people may or may not know this, but Dong mentions about the work that I do with APEX, the youth organization for the Asian American community that I sit on the board of. I've been very fortunate that Dao has been on the board with me for, this is going on his fourth year, huge supporter, and has brought a lot of people from your guys' circles into APEX, brought yourself, you've come out to all the fundraisers to represent and everything. I understand how Dao wanted to do that show in Chinatown, because maybe because we're Asians, Dao. But for you, Maxwell, as a Jamaican in the city, like, why was it meaningful for you as well?
For me, it wasn't really just about it being in Chinatown. It was really about the, you know, the crossroads of all immigrants coming into New York. So, mm-hmm. you know, being Chinese, Jamaican, African, whatever you are, like, you're an immigrant of some sorts. So we're both first generation born and raised in New York. So mm-hmm. it was bigger than just being Chinese or Jamaican, or it's not really about that. It's being, you know, people of color or just being an immigrant.
Yeah,
and just, you know, waving that flag and standing on our soapbox and trying to use fashion as our voice.
Yeah,
it really has nothing to do with, I consider myself, you know, Chinese. I'm joking.
I do too. He, you know, for the amount that he comes out and reps for APEX, you're like honorary Chinese, and or not just Chinese, because I'm Thai actually. So.
Gong Lei Fa Choy.
Oh, ni
hao. Are you handing out honorary Chinese?
Honors? No. But it's really just about being immigrants. It's like we're all one and the same. It really 100%. Has nothing to do with, you know, Chinese, you know, white, black.
For sure. What I love this is that we're all Asians around this table, between Dao being Chinese, myself being Thai, Jonathan who's Blasian, Japanese, and
and black.
And then Stephen.
And then Stephen, who I always say,
why have a mic?
Why he looks white and he's from North Carolina, he's hardcore Asian. Like he's got a Buddhist tattoo on his chest, and he married Asian. He's
okay. Hey, bro. Yeah. Respect, man. Respect.
Right? 100%. 100%. Like,
leave all women alone, bro.
FYI, I know his wife. She only accepted him because he was so Asian.
Yeah. Okay.
But all that aside, so we're wrapping up 2018. Like, what's 2000? Is it 2018? 2018. So what is 2019 look for you guys? What does world dominance look like?
I don't know what world dominance looks like. But
we're just trying to pay rent over here.
2019 looks like. looks good. We are in the midst of transitioning our business into a direct-to-consumer model. Mm-hmm. So throughout the last 8 years, we've been, you know, this wholesale model. And that served its purpose. And I think that we got to the point where we felt like it was time for us to really step into the new age. So, you know, we felt like our business really needed to speak directly to our consumers.
Yeah.
And certainly now we have the platform and the ability and the means to do that. You know, we felt like we have a really strong brand, a really identifiable brand.
Yeah.
And it got to the point where we felt, you know, that our wholesale partners, who have been great, you know, they all took in parts of the collection and wound up sort of telling their own story about what public school was. And yeah. Whether it was good or bad, it was just different from every other place that you would go into.
Yeah.
And so you have all this different messaging happening around the brand, things that we may or may not agree with. And a lot of our retailers would ask us for exclusives. Mm-hmm. So even the product, it was different. You go from store to store.
Yeah.
And I remember walking in somewhere and seeing something on the rack and being like, this is how, and looking at the label and not even knowing it was our stuff. And we're way too small of a business for that to have happen. And so it felt like the brand was getting away from us, and we really needed to do something about it, you know, to be able to reel it back in and claim it. Or else we felt like we could sort of just lose it forever. Mm-hmm. So that was really the decision for us to want to switch into this new model. And mm-hmm. You know, it's a difficult decision to make that hard left, because there's not a perfect time to be able to pull all of your business, you know, your wholesale business out of the stores, and then just go strictly direct to retail. So that's been difficult, you know, dealing with, you know, people calling and saying, oh, why, you know, you guys are not in stores anymore, you're going out of business. And so for us, we've been really committed on this new path, right? Mm-hmm. For this D2C model. And then in the interim, we also felt like it was the right time for us to be able to look at how we were producing our garments and looking at what our impact was
fucking up the earth
on you know, on a bigger scale. Mm-hmm. Right, like no one needs another pair of pants, let alone mm-hmm. you know, a pair of public school pants.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really coming to grips with, you know, how we would move into sort of the new era of fashion and fashion production, and what it meant to be, what it meant to have a business, you know, producing garments.
For sure.
You know, our industry is the second leading polluting industry in the world, behind mm-hmm. you know, behind oil. Mm-hmm. You know, I have kids. Max maybe has some kids out there he doesn't know about.
That's so good. I think I got two kids out there too.
We should have like a family reunion.
If the one that I'm thinking about, I got one that's 10 and one that's 9.
Back to back.
That's right. Irish it was a busy year.
Yeah.
What was the inspiration? Actually, that's a big kind of like change and statement to make.
Yeah.
Where did that come from?
It was like a few years back. Remember there was like a Christmas that it was like 70 degrees? Do you remember that? It was like 3 years ago.
Yeah, we talked about like how we outside.
And we were, I usually go down to Philly to my sister's house and we were barbecuing on Christmas Day.
Yeah.
Outside, it was like 75 degrees.
Wow.
And it just hit, you know, and then after that we were invited out to speak on a panel out in Copenhagen. For Copenhagen Fashion Summit, mm-hmm. and we saw all these wonderful speakers, including Eileen Fisher, who we now have a wonderful collaboration with. Mm. And then it just was thing after thing.
Yep.
You know, the timing of it hit us, and it had been on our minds of, you know, how do we, you know, public school was always, the way we came up with the name was that it was never supposed to be just a clothing brand. It was always going to be a platform for to affect change in some way. Mm-hmm. And we had been on that social consciousness wave for a while, like our shows back to back, especially with the 16 election, you know, dealt with some really heavy political themes and, mm-hmm. You know, working with the ACLU, there were, you know, the responsibility was always there to do something more than just make clothes.
Yeah.
And so, you know, with the timing of us wanting to switch the model to D2C, it also was a perfect opportunity for us to really address our practices, our production practices, and the way that we source fabric and produce garments. You know, it all just made sense that we needed to do it right now. You know, to be honest, that's the only way that gets me through the day, actually. Yeah. You know, like, to just be making clothes. Meaningful. Like, we played Fashion House for 3, 4, 5 years, whatever it was. Yeah. It's like, cool, you know, we did that. And now it's like, what are you really doing? Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. What are we really doing right now?
Yeah.
You know?
I know that you and I have talked about this for a little bit this past year, just in general, in terms of like, essentially, I want to say it's like evolving, you know, what making public school as a label, a platform that is essentially continuing to push the realm of fashion and everything. Hearing what you shared earlier about locking yourselves up into a room for 6 months and just like figuring out like what this is about and what you guys want to be, I feel like this time mirrors that moment where you guys are also locking yourselves up again. Because I know you guys, while set up at 3 Howard currently, which is kind of like your laboratory, and I have the luxury of being able to work above you guys. To the listeners, I think people might have seen in the bio that Dong shared, but they also have a tech company called Sweetin, and Sweetin is actually right above the public school 3 Howard office. So I'm lucky to be able to see these guys on a regular basis. But you guys are essentially locking yourselves into that laboratory to plan the next game-changing phase of what public school is about, because the stuff you guys are doing, what I've always enjoyed is how cerebral, with how little intellect that I have. And I don't read that many books magazines or anything, but what I've always enjoyed is how, you know, right now it's like, there is a trajectory for architecture, there's a trajectory for fashion, and how constantly, like, it's, you guys are, it might be 6 months or longer. I feel like for MN, we've been doing this for 4 years now. We've kind of been locked in the room, no publicity, no marketing. This week of radio stuff is the first PR media we've done in 4 years since launch, right? Kind of crazy.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Yeah. But this is us having locked in a room, but the reason why we want to do this show with you guys is this whole thing where it's like, we're trying to figure out how to fix a broken architecture industry, which is extremely fragmented, and I can speak, I can go down a rabbit hole, but to work with fellow designers who are also trying to like change a broken fashion industry, like, you know, right now this whole notion of like brands being driven by all these drops and like these crazy collaborations that take advantage of all these I always call it like all these hype kids. It's great. Like I love what it's doing in terms of like building this culture, but it's also, as somebody who I wouldn't call myself a fashion aficionado, because as you see, I don't really wear anything special, but everything that's coming out is like, I would never wear this shit. I don't know if it's just because I'm not a millennial or what. And so when I think about your guys as a brand and not trying to jump into this, like taking a step back to be like, hold up, we could do that, but we're not going to. And we're going to continue to innovate and come up with the next game-changing thing, like to continue to push the industry, I think, is one of the things that we really respect here at MN. But, you know, it's not easy. It's not easy because it's like you have to take that moment to take a step back and remove yourself from the game in order to come back even stronger. So, I see like another, yep. You guys are on another six-month hiatus hole in the, are you guys both working at your studio this time? Because I know you got a family this time, Dow.
No, we actually work out of 3 hours or our office. Mm. We've graduated from those days.
Word.
Thank God.
Word, word, word.
Kind of. Maybe not, actually.
McGriddles.
I'm a sausage egg biscuit dude myself.
Turkey bacon, egg and cheese on waffles.
We had a really strict diet when we launched public school.
It was dumplings.
Oh, word.
Like rotisserie chicken.
Gyoza. Ramen.
Ramen.
Which brand of ramen? There's that red and black label.
Yeah, Namshim.
Namshim?
Yeah, yeah. The super spicy bowl.
Right,
yeah.
Right, right. Mama's the Thai label. It usually comes in a glittery pack.
Thai.
Yeah. Right.
Keep the Chinese on this side, guys. We did gyoza, we did some ramen, some McGriddles. McGriddles was like a treat. That was like a 6 a.m., 7 a.m. all nighter, make a McGriddle, just licking fingers.
Yeah.
You know what?
Yeah.
We need to make some McGriddles when they just bring us back to like.
You never know what's going to expect.
That should be our next meal. For like if we do an event.
Yeah, yeah.
Like turkey, breakfast, like a
turkey and griddles, turkey bacon.
Yeah, yeah. Also have some Pepto Bismol, Tums, Sandy Wipes. You know, like
the before and after,
the full thing. I mean, when you're young, you can do that shit, but when you're older, you have to be prepared. Like hand sanitizer and like all that shit. Little Febreze air, 100%.
It's getting too specific.
What?
What is he talking
about? So you guys know we stock the MN toilets with.
So I'm actually curious, was fashion always your guys' like creative outlet? Like even before you met, was it always like a platform or was it just something you were interested in? Because something that got asked of us a little bit earlier was, I mean, I had mentioned for me like...
he was into flower making.
Yeah, before I did... It was always a... Thank you. It was always a...
Dan loves flowers, by the way.
Yeah, I'm,
a lot.
I met Jonathan's University of Michigan roommate, and he would tell me how they would plan these crazy house parties.
No, this was in Los Angeles.
Oh,
Los Angeles.
So you were already in grad school. Michigan. They would plan these crazy house parties, right? And they would have everything set, like all the drinks, all the whatever, candles. But
they would not.
But I'm not.
Set the candles.
I'm not even exaggerating here. Jonathan would not let his roommate open the door until he finished the floral arrangement because it had to be tight for the party. Like, that's some real shit.
Yo, I'm
be repping the culture, man.
Yo, so Dow is looking at each other like, okay.
I like to go
hell
back.
Of a house party.
Yeah, man, yeah. It was crazy, man. Flower engines.
It was bottles of wine. And,
yeah, it was like
and books. Or?
Oh yeah, yeah, it was Chris, magazines. Chris and what's it called? Peonies.
Peonies.
Peonies are beautiful. Be quiet. Yeah, so I was kind of curious, actually, though, you know, for me, like, the different, like, designing was always actually a way to deal with, like, it always offered me some opportunities outside of, like, traditional, like, cultural identity or my soapbox. Actually, I was just accepted for, like, what I made. And I actually always wondered because, I mean, I don't really know your story intimately, but when I started learning about your company and what you guys were doing, I was like, these guys are kind of like rare in a way because of how people think of like the fashion industry, right? Where it comes from. And I'm just kind of curious if like you were attuned to that, like, and that you were these kind of like kind of outstanding people within that industry, and if it had always been a thing that fed you. I mean, because, and I'm asking, I guess, in the context of the show and what Food is set up is about kind of talking to young people and people trying to come up. I mean, in our position, sometimes we don't realize that, like, we're, I mean, an example, and it seems like impossible in a way what we've been able to do. You know, even we're young and just starting out, you guys are more established. But I'm kind of curious how you viewed yourselves coming up and how you see yourself now. Damn, that show was deep.
That was really deep.
Yeah. You see, that just so took deep. A deep breath.
Yeah.
Yeah, he just took some Altoids, so he got that like minty breath.
Can you smell my breath?
Smells good.
I thought this was Viagra. Yeah, I don't know what Viagra looks like.
It's only Monday night.
Yeah, I mean, it seems, you know, really, it really seems like a long, long time ago. It seems like a world. A universe from when we launched to where we are now. And the, you know, how inclusivity is such a hot topic now. And that's the, you know, that's what everyone is about now. You know, like there wasn't inclusivity back then. It was like exclusivity.
Yeah.
It was like complete opposite, and I think that that's what, you know, like for Max and I, we sort of embodied the, you know, that first wave of inclusivity of like, you know, you see us and you think one thing, and then you see the work, and then you think something else, and so. I think that we'd always felt like we had something to prove because there wasn't anyone else doing, you know, there wasn't anyone that looked like us or talked like us or, you know, there wasn't anyone else for us to sort of look to or lean on or, you know, compare ourselves to. So it always felt like we were pushing the boundary, not to feel like, oh, we're the first ones here, but it was because it wasn't really happening.
Right, because you guys were, like, doing literally it. The first.
Yeah, and so the timing of it all, you know, that the industry was, you know, maybe ready to let a handful of, you know, designers like us sort of get on, and then, you know, then the flood came, you know, pouring in, you know, and I don't think anyone back then would have imagined our industry being the way that it is now, you know, where people of color are celebrated and, you know, respected and featured in campaigns and sought after and desired. Like, that was not the case when we started. So, you know, it always felt like we had a mission to you know, push the conversation and have people, you know, think differently. And nowadays, you know, it's different. You know, like now we're sort of trying to, you know, I always say we were like the newest brand of the old fashion model, you know?
Sure.
And now we're sort of like the oldest brand in the new fashion model, sure. Which is weird, you know, to go from being like the young upstarts that, right. that broke in,
right.
you know, and figured it out to being sort of like the OGs in a relatively mm-hmm. quickly changing, incessantly changing industry. So yeah, so it's having to deal with, you know, with the dynamic of that, and you know, just staying the course and still believing that, you know, our message and our vision is you know, is a valid one, mm-hmm. To keep, you know, to keep pushing forward.
For sure. How do you guys feel about, like, you're, what's so interesting to me is that you guys are, in a way, it's like you were talking about being able to, like, say, here's my voice, here's my seat at the table, almost as if you're speaking to, like, the kind of, like, accepted mm-hmm. Canon in your field.
Yeah.
But do you also feel like you're talking to the place where you came from, Sean John, Fubu, Carl Kanai, like, because you're right in between in a way, right?
You guys
like
came from Carl Kanai?
No, I'm just saying like that.
No.
Like, I mean, for somebody on the, like yeah. just a consumer like me, like, I'm like, you guys are in between. Like, that was the magic, was like, you did this thing that, like, I would hope that I could do. Like, we're a similar generation where I'm like, how do you jump and talk to these two things? Because one side would be like, you're like from the street, the other side is like, yo, you went and like, now you're dealing with high fashion shit, you left mm-hmm. the street, like, how do you navigate that in between? And do you feel like you're talking to both, or is it simply like your focus on your own, like the mission that drives your, the dialogue that you guys have as designers?
A lot of thinking going on between these two.
We've always like, we're like street travelers, you know? So like, we've traveled and being street is pretty much worldwide mm-hmm. in a way. So mm. I think we're talking to ourselves, it's not even our old selves because we're still mm-hmm. ourselves. And then talking to the other people who take for granted what street is and mm. take street as inspiration for instance, like, oh, let's shoot these people. But like, some people never really grew up street. Like mm-hmm. they don't, really know street culture or street life, and like mm-hmm. that's us, like, and we also like high fashion shit, like we also shop, we could shop those stores, and we could also wear Stussy. I mean, I'm not gonna wear Stussy, but like, no offense, it's Stussy.
shout out to Stussy.
But I'm saying, like, the idea of a Supreme, like, you would appreciate a Supreme, but you could also appreciate a Yoji, and where was that middle ground? Like, nobody could speak, you know, who is that consumer, who is wearing it, who's doing it, like, why couldn't you be both, like, why can't you wear both, you know, like, mm-hmm. and that was like what we were trying to shoot for, and that's, and because that's what we do, that's what we wear. You can wear a Champion sweatshirt and, you know, $1,000 sneakers and keep it moving, a white t-shirt
was
and some jeans.
Fear and like trying to like carve that ground out, because like that's a thing, like we all know people who've been skewered for like, yo, you know, you don't rep whatever, like, is that something that was it ever a fear? Because I think one of the things that, like, at least I'm just speaking personally, like, you know, like, I'm looking for freedom in thought and design and approach, which is something you guys have managed to do. Was there ever a point where you were like, shit, and should I, like, do you feel like I have to choose? Or were you just like, we're going to always be able to be both, to carve that space out for other people who know they are too?
No, I think, you know, quite honestly, that's, you know, like, coming from New York, like, that's what you are anyway. Mm-hmm. You're never just one thing, mm-hmm. you know? You're everything. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we never felt like we had to choose, you know, because it was all around us. Right. And by osmosis, we've taken that in. So, you know, that's why we called the label Public School, and that's why we rep New York you know, so hard.
Yeah.
Is because it's given us that freedom to feel like anything goes. You do whatever you want here in New York. And yeah. You know, so long as you do it real and you know, you don't bother anyone else and you know, like you carve your own lane, like you'll be loved for that.
Yeah.
Right? And so we never felt torn. We certainly felt sort of like outsiders all the time. Mm-hmm. But again, being from New York, you're just like, I can't be an outsider. Like, I'm inside the outside, mm-hmm. you know? Yeah. Like, so for us, that there was, you know, never that fear. That's what we got from New York City, was like, yo, do whatever you want. Mm-hmm. Just do it in a real way. And, you know, don't fuck around with anyone else. Like, do it in your own way.
Yeah.
Keep your head up. Mm-hmm. And what do you got, you know, like, what do you got to be scared of? Like, mm-hmm. what do you really have to fear? Mm-hmm. So that has always been our approach.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, if you went to public school, you know what it is. Like, you know what the feeling is.
Yep.
You never quite fit in, but you're a piece of the puzzle. And you know, like you're an integral piece.
Yeah.
Yep. So that's how we really approach things.
Yeah. The last question actually I had, and I want to be respectful of your guys' time, is
I got one more question after that.
Okay.
He's less respectful.
About your guys' partnership. Like, did you ever think like you would do what you're doing solo, or was it like, did it just make sense? Because I think another thing that has been a theme in this radio show and obviously in our company is like working with other people, and you guys also collaborate in a way that I consider to be very specific and authentic, you know, to things that you guys love. And I'm just kind of curious, like, if you could talk about that for other people who are thinking of starting something, and the value of that partnership, professional, friendship, personal.
I think for us, our collaboration works and our partnership really works because one, being honest with each other, mm-hmm. right, is going to be key. So I think for people getting into partnerships, it's really like a marriage. Like, if you can't have that conversation, the uncomfortable ones and the comfortable ones, then it's really not going to work at all. So I think knowing that and us being both comfortable in our own skin and like being able to, you know, even when we do fight, like whoever's winning the fight is, you know, feels more passionate about that specific subject, and you have to like, you know, fall back a little bit or mm-hmm. or have have a legit argument or have a conversation about it and not feel a certain way because it's for the benefit of what you guys are doing. Mm-hmm. So in getting into that, like, that's how the partnership for us work. Is just both we have like-minded, you know, references for everything. So when it comes to like certain things like that, that's mm-hmm. the easy part. And the hard part is like having the conversation of like, if I don't like something or if he doesn't like something, just talking about it. And it's like, okay, like you get that. Like, there's no egos really involved, and you keep it moving, because it really is a marriage if you want it to work. Like, mm-hmm. you're not going to win every argument. You're not going to, you know, you both want to create the best thing. So it's even, and it's also beneficial for pushing each other. Like, if something comes about, something you're like, yo, why not let's do this way, and you know, it's taking the same thing but making it better and like pushing us to do better for ourselves, other than like just being in a room by yourself and be like, I think this is it, you know, but like having somebody else with another mind just be like, yo, but what if you know, this sleeve had this little detail right mm-hmm. here that you push, you like, oh shit, I didn't even see it that way. Like, that's when the shit really works for us, the partnership. And just good to have, you know, a bouncing board and not being able to talk to you know, not talking to yourself in a wall in a room and just actually really talking to somebody with another brain is just, it means the world. Instead of, you know, a team, like, you might have people that you hire and they're gonna be like, yeah, good job. That's I love that idea. But like, they're not really pushing you to be any better, or like, you know, so like having somebody on that, you know, side is, you know, it's beneficial. For sure. Was that the question?
I was thinking, because it's like it actually dovetails with my last question, and then we have to wrap up. is that one of the things that always was a fascination for us here at MN and for myself personally was how, as bespoke and pioneering as you guys were very much in the hip-hop and urban communities that, you know, I mean, especially in 07, 08, while it arguably is like, has been like a leading pioneering community that is now the predominant, like, both like choice of music, but also for a whole generation, like what it represents in terms of like diversity and multiculturalism and everything. How did you guys find alignment in that, and also be able to like help to grow it? Because that had to have been a conscious decision, because everything I see you guys do, it's beautiful. And this, maybe my question is not specific enough, more like somebody who, in an earlier radio show that Dong did with me, I said to him that I grew up in Normal, Illinois, which is a farm community, and then this is like the 70s and 80s, and then Snoop Dogg's Doggy Style dropped in 93, and I went from listening to Phil Collins and Simon and Garfunkel to like only hip-hop, and I went from wearing like Structure, you know the brand Structure?
Oh, yeah, fantastic, right? Brand.
Yeah. So I wore a lot of like khakis and flannels and gray knit vests. I think Structure is like in one of the Express Limited brands. Mm-hmm. But anyways, well, like the moment like that shit dropped, I was wearing these. FYI for you guys who can't see, Dow and Max were looking at each other like, what is he talking about? Is that Oshkosh Bagosh? Yes, it is kind of like that. But like overnight, I went from wearing that shit to wearing Gerbeau and cross colors and flight caps and Jordans. And it was like, I had this whole, like, I found like what the identity of it. Was where it's like what it felt like me, and the reason why I bring that up is that it's...
Did this also have something to do with your personal life and women? Or?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, that's a whole nother radio show. But you guys know my preference. I've had the most love with a certain type.
What the hell is your damn question, pretty little kid?
Let me get back to the question so we can wrap up this show. Is that how did you guys find alignment with the hip-hop community? Because I think a lot of, well, 10 years later, it makes sense. Like a lot of labels are just kind of like, oh, yeah, of course, like hip-hop and fashion. Like it's, you know, that's hand in hand. 10 years ago, it wasn't. You know, like Sean John, great label, successful brand, I wouldn't say it had the respect of like your fashion peers. I say ours, but being in the design community, but like you guys like embraced it, and like everything about Public School is also hip-hop, it's also urban, it's also multiculturalism, but from day one, which is something I always found incredibly exciting, right? Because it's like when you read about it and then you see all the people who support it, all the people at your shows, and it's like, wow, they're doing it, but it's not like quote-unquote ghetto. It's like it's elevating a whole population. And you guys embrace it from day one. I just love to hear about, as the last question, like the strategy behind that. I know it's not a strategy like you guys were like a business decision. I know it was just inherent, but like how you guys thought about that, because I think a lot of people that were trying to launch their labels 10 years ago would have been like, that's my music, that's my jam, that's the playlist in whatever, they are my friends wearing it, but I need to like also balance it out with like this other side and maybe not be too deep in it, and, you know, and you guys were like, fuck it, we're going all the way in, and it's ours.
I think you answered the question.
but what was for you guys like, you know, like what the actual decision thought behind it? I mean, even now, like
you guys were so kind to send us a Moe Public School bottle to our office to celebrate the holidays, and like all these subtle little things. But it's not subtle. It's like it's intentional, and it's like for us, it's like we on the MN team. It's like this is really brilliant.
Thanks.
And last question.
I don't know if, you know, if it was intentional. It just was, you know, maybe the subtlety was intentional. You know, we were always careful actually not to just be pigeonholed, because we saw what you know, that would lead to, right? Mm-hmm. We saw, you know, how Sean John was pigeonholed, and, you know, some other brands during that time were pigeonholed. And, you know, now look at it. Maybe if those brands came out today, you know, we'd be having a whole different conversation. So we were actually really careful in terms of not getting pigeonholed and not making it
too.
Yeah, like it was, you know, we never felt like we had to state that. That was sort of the obvious part. That's who we were. That's what we grew up on. That's what we listened to. That's where we ate. That's what we talked. That's, you know, and it was still special back then. Now it's, you know, it's everywhere. So it doesn't feel as special. And maybe you... It doesn't feel as special, so you don't want to protect it as much as we wanted to protect it back then. But yeah, we were really conscious about that, and of not being pigeonholed. That even though that was what made us, it didn't define us. And you know, it was just the obvious. We didn't have to scream that or say that. That's who we were unmistakably. And one last thought was, like, I remember when the Outkast record came out, the double album, the Love Below and Speaker Box.
In 03.
And they won Best Album of the Year. Went 10 times, you know, went, what is it when you sell 10 million records? Diamond. You know, and everyone was like, "Oh, well, it's, you know, it's not a hip hop record." You know, that was the overwhelming critique of the album. That, oh, it's not a hip hop album, so you know, you can't classify it as, it's bigger than hip hop. But but why? You know, like it in its core, it was a hip hop album.
Absolutely,
because you know, Andre and Big Boy are hip hop. You know.
Yep,
it doesn't matter what it sounds like.
Exactly.
It's who did it, right? Exactly. And so that's how I always felt about our label. Like, we couldn't be anything other than hip-hop, because that's who we are. But that doesn't define, you know, it might not look like it. You know, it might not fit like it. It might not feel like it. But it is what it is, you know? And and so that's, you know, that's how, you know, we feel about it pretty much.
Word. That's, I was going to say, that's really awesome and something that really resonates with us, because again, as we wrap up here for the MN team, Jonathan, Steven, and myself, we, although we're not like New Yorkers like you guys, we've been here like 20 years, but not born and raised. But one of the things is
that number keeps going up. It was 12.
I came here in 2000, so 18 ish. but one of the things that you know, for us and trying to build we are in our 4-year focus studio phase, working out of Jonathan's studio. Trying to mirror with the stuff that you guys did, is that we look to our peers in terms of people who love the city, love the culture, and what we're trying to do for our communities. So to be able to have you guys share the stories with us, and how hard it is to be game changers, for us is very exciting. I don't know if there's any last things that you want to share. One of the things that Dong, who again set up the show, said was that, you know, for any kids that may be listening, any inspirational, aspirational thoughts that you can share with them as we close out?
Just do your work, you know? Just know the difference between mediocre and great. It's not the same.
Maxwell.
Nope, I'm all right.
Maxwell will close out by saying, always be sexy on a regular basis.
No.
But all jokes aside, like, thank you guys for doing this.
No, thank you. This was awesome.
Thank you.
These guys wondered if they would be able to fill a full hour. I actually have like a dozen more questions, but I'm going to hold off for a future show. But thank you very much, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. Right,
thanks. And to our five listeners, have a good night.
Yes, have a good night. I'm sure you're asleep by now. Keep sleeping.